Yes.
Right, just the causation finding.
Yes, but if you look at the case law, I mean, causation is, it's a huge issue in workers' comp cases. So it's very important. I mean, if you're seeking medical benefits, it has to be work-related. If you're seeking wage loss, it has to be work-related. Everything has to be work-related. That's the biggest issue in any workers' comp case is causation. Okay?
The statute, isn't there a difference, though, in the causation for MMI and the causation for impairment? I mean, can't you conceive of the difference where it's work-related and it's now maximum medical improvement, but it doesn't relate to impairment?
No.
You cannot conceive of that.
Causation is simple. Is the condition work-related? That's what you have to decide initially. So that's step number one. When you have an 18-month dime, you must first determine, is it work-related? In this case, Dr. Milliken stated explicitly.
If you have causation of work-related injury to an arm, and you claim permanent impairment for a foot, you're saying that causation is still, causation is causation?
Well, a dying physician has to make a causation determination. Says it. They always have to make that determination. So this first step is the condition work-related? Here, the dying physician said yes. Then the next step is the particular condition, in this case there were two, are those conditions of maximum medical improvement? He said yes.
Then what is the logic for having the two-step process?
Well, that's interesting, and that's kind of a point of an interesting legal issue that's here in our workers' compensation system. But the statute says that the authorized treating physician has to make the finding of impairment if they're level two. So you, an 18-month dime cannot make an impairment decision because that has to originate with the treating physician. So in this case, what happened was the 18-month dime made causation determinations, said the claimant was at MMI. The case went back to the authorized treating physician who then made a determination of impairment. The respondents then contested the impairment and we went back to a second division IME with Dr. Pinheiro. But my position is, I believe this is extremely important for the court to clarify in their decision. The second dime did not have the right to readdress causation because there was a judgment made. When the first dime found causation and the respondents did not contest it, there was a judgment, essentially, a determination that the dime, the second dime was bound by.
So at the risk of demonstrating my ignorance in this area of the law, once the first dime had determined causation and the physician, the ATP, had determined an impairment rating, the impairment rating itself could be changed, the percentages could be changed, but it couldn't be, for instance, zero. It could, the second dime couldn't say, I don't think this one of the two aspects was really work-related. So you're saying the second dime would have to award some percentage for each of the two impairments.
Well, the second dime would be bound by the first dime's findings that the two medical conditions were causally related. And then the second dime would have to apply the AMA guides to permanent impairment third edition, and if appropriate, pursuant to that book, then award impairment. Sometimes there are causally related injuries that don't warrant impairment.
There's not an actual impairment to any degree.
Right. Okay. And that's a factual issue.
Okay.
Okay. So,
But that's an issue that the doctor giving the impairment finding must make a finding of some sort relating to causation. But otherwise, they would never get to impairment.
Well, normally, yes, but where there had already been one dime, the first dime, where the causation had been determined and the respondents did not contest that causation determination became the rule of the case, the law of the case. It was a judgment that was binding upon the treating physician, the subsequent division IME, the parties, and the judge, the administrative law judge in this case. It was a judgment. It was final. Okay? And the Loprino case says that if you don't contest the dime's findings, then there's no jurisdiction for any court subsequently to revisit that issue.
Well, you contested the Dimes findings. You asked the court to vacate the admission liability.
No, I did not. What I did was I said, strike the final admission because the 18-month dime does not have the power to determine impairment. That has to originate with the treating physician.
But it has the right to determine causation?
Yes, it has to.
Okay, show me where, or tell me what language in the statute authorizes the 18-month dime to find something other than MMI.
Well, if you look at 842.107.2 subsection 1, the very first section of that statute, it says, this section, referring to 842.107.2, governs the selection of an independent medical examiner, also referred to in this section as an IME, to resolve disputes arising under section 842.107. So there was a dispute on IME, or excuse me, there was a dispute on MMI that originated under 842.107, but the dime process is governed by 842.107.2, which says that the IME's findings and determinations must be contested by the respondent. Okay, now, interestingly, a similar situation arose in this court in 2002. It's 58 P. 3rd, 1162, Colorado Court of Appeals, 2002. It's the case of City County of Denver versus ICAO. And in that case, there was a causation determination made that was not contested by the insurance company. And then several years later, they went to a dime.
Is that case cited in your brief?
No, it's not.
Okay, so how are we supposed to look? We're not supposed to look at cases that aren't cited in brief, counsel.
Well, it's okay. But it's a case from this court that addressed the specific issue. And I think it's important for you to look at it. The other thing, too, with regards to your argument that I waived my rights or claimant's rights by requesting a striking in the FA, jurisdiction cannot be conferred neither or waived by any party. Okay, that is a well-settled legal doctrine that has been on the books for many, many years. Also, there are cases from this court that state that a judge cannot extend jurisdictional deadlines. Okay, the judge cannot do that. So the effect of the pre-hearing administrative law judge Healy's order does not extend jurisdictional deadlines. He can't. Nobody has the power to do that. Okay, that's in the law, and you can look at 181 P. 3rd, 1173, Colorado Court of Appeals, 2008 on that.
Counsel, before you run out of time, I want to ask you what you want us to do, because I am confused about the relief. It sounds like today you're saying we should reinstate the impairment ratings and the causation findings of this 18-month dime. I think his name was Dr. Milliken. That's not what you asked for, however, in page 44 of your brief, which is to do something with the impairment ratings of Dr. Pinero, and it seems contradictory to me.
Okay. What I'm asking the court to do is to reinstate Dr. Milliken's causation determinations. That is that the lower back and the CRPS are work-related. And I'm asking the court to return this case to Judge Haar to determine whether maintenance care is appropriate, because his denial of maintenance care was based upon a false legal conclusion that he had jurisdiction to revisit causation.
What are the impairment rates for the lower back and the spine?
Well, it's not to be disrespectful, Judge, but it really doesn't matter, because the total impairment from both dimes was less than 25%. So it doesn't matter, because the claimant has already reached the $75,000 cap, and he's not going to get any money anyway.
So this is all about future benefits?
Yes, and finding that the particular conditions are work-related so that additional benefits can be sought on those injuries. I reserved the last 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Good morning, judges. Michael Perales, registration 1349, appearing on behalf of the response in the case, the employer and insurance carrier. The way this case got set up is that this claimant sustained a right foot injury. And when a cow fell on his foot at the meatpacking company, he was placed at MMI and without impairment on November 16, 2004. He had ongoing problems He tried to reopen his case. Respondents asked for an IME with Dr. Reichart, and Reichart said, yeah, I think this is continuing to be related to the original injury. We opened it in March of 2008. He had surgery to remove a the nerve issue on his right foot. He came under the care of Dr. Wunder. Then Wunder started treating him for other unrelated conditions, including low back and what he believed was complex regional pain syndrome. And then he started working them up for that. Respondent questioned this, and they had Dr. Goldman take a look at it. Dr. Goldman says, I don't think the back's related, but he should be worked up for complex regional pain syndrome. So they did the testing under the medical treatment guidelines, and there are tests that they use to determine whether or not the person has that diagnosis. One is a triple phase scan, the other one is QSARC, which is a testing of the nerves and sweat, and it's complex. But just to suffice it to say, after the testing was done, Dr. Goldman took a look at it again and said, this guy does not have chronic regional pain syndrome, and he does not have low back injury related to this. So the since Dr. Wunder would not put the claim at a maximum medical improvement, we respondents requested the 18-month time. That's where we start, okay? And then the 18-month time was selected. The 18-month time determined that the claimant had a 20% permanent impairment and was at maximum medical improvement. So respondents...
I hate to interrupt, but we seem to all be a little confused on this issue. What did the 18-month time determine on the issue of causation, whether each of these conditions was work-related?
He thought that the back was, and that he had probable CRPS. So this is where the money comes into effect.
The second dime have authority to make that causation determination under the statute, counsel?
Yes. Otherwise, it is not a truly independent medical evaluation. That dime is a separate dime. It is a dime to determine an impairment, not maximum medical improvement. Nobody disputed maximum medical improvement. So the failure to object or to do anything with respect to Milliken's dime doesn't affect the Dr. Pinero's right to determine what is causally related based upon my review and what the impairment is for those conditions.
So you're saying that Dr. Milliken did have authority, he certainly had authority to determine MMI, that was the reason.
Presumptively he had the right to determine MMI.
Did he have the right to determine an impairment rating?
Well, that's the question. We attempted to argue yes, because the difference, the monetary effect of that would be to award the claimant an additional $5,700, which was unacceptable claimant. That's why the claimant moved to strike that final commission liability and take his chances with a new rating from the ATP. Okay. So we start all over with the ATP. The all ATP right. starts again.
Now hold on a second.
Yeah.
If Dr. Milliken had authority to make that causation determination and the impairment determination.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that. Only as to MMI.
Okay. So it's got me confused. Okay. He did not have authority to make the causation determination.
No, this is what claimant argued in his motion to strike.
Okay. You said something different. I just wanted to clarify.
I apologize if I misstated.
Okay.
This is what claimant's saying. The 18-month dime specifically refers to two separate dime processes. Nowhere within 842.107.8b2, which is the 18-month dime, does the legislature contemplate that an 18-month dime would address permanent impairment.
Right.
So some other doctor has to do that and has to determine causation with respect to that impairment.
Well, that's the question, though. Is causation part of this MMI that the 18-month dime had to find, or is causation not a factor until you get to the impairment rating? And what Mr. Hogan seems to suggest is that MMI includes causation. And as Judge Nieto pointed out, it may be a totally different causation. And I just want to know what the position of your client is.
Well, when the impairment comes, you have to determine cause. This entirely separate doctor over here has to determine what is causally related and what is the impairment related to that causally related injury. So that's what non-18-month, the regular dying process does. And Loprino doesn't apply, because Loprino only applied to a failure to object to a regular dime. There's no case law on an 18-month dime. Nobody knows what the effect of that is. But in this case, what the effect was is that claimant struck the final admission liability. It went back to the ATP. Now, if claimant's argument is correct, the ATP is bound by the dime's determination as causation. And I don't think that's true either. the ATP starts all over again. And the ATP says, this is what I think is related because I'm the authorized treating physician. And then as soon as the claimant, ATP puts the claimant at maximum improvement, or the maximum medical improvement has been determined by the doctor. He can only determine permanent impairment. In this case, he determined there was a 27% impairment, not a 20% impairment. So respondents disputed that and requested a regular doctor. So we have a third doctor looking at the case. And so it's our position that it's the right of the regular doctor to determine causation for that medical impairment. It's not easy. She was not bound by Milliken's determinations.
Can causation be separated from impairment? Is it your position that cannot be separated from impairment?
I'm not sure I understand, Judge.
Could the 18-month dying find causation independent of finding impairment? Is causation part of the MMI finding that the 18-month dying has to address?
For purposes of MMI only, not for impairment.
Okay. What does that mean? And here's why I'm confused.
He says, as this claimant plateaued, as he received the treatment that he's supposed to receive, and so that's what he determines, okay? Then the ATP is supposed to, and under this scenario, under what this case we did, what the claimant did was to strike the final admission and send him back to the ATP.
I understand.
And starts anew.
I understand.
Except for the issue of MMI.
But let me ask you about a sentence that appears in the panel's opinion, okay? This is what they wrote. They wrote, because causation is inherent in the MMI determination, the 18-month Dimes conclusions that the CRPS and the lower lumbar spine components related to the injury were also subject to presumptive weight for purposes of overcoming the MMI determination. According to the panel, it seems like they separate causation
for MMI
from the causation impairment. How did the ALJ allocate some presumptive weight to the 18-month Dimes determination of causation?
It wasn't an issue. It was only evidence of what causation was. The presumptive evidence was that of Dr. Pinero's causation determination, because that was the impairment, not MMI. MMI was not an issue. Nobody disputed MMI.
But what was the scope of the injury? Did it include lumbar spine and CRPS?
Pinero, no.
I know she didn't. The question is, what is the panel saying when they say presumptive weight has to be given to those two aspects of the causation determination with respect to the MMI?
As to MMI only, not impairment.
What's the relevance of it? If he's not going to be compensated for those injuries, what's the difference if he's at MMI with respect to those?
Because it starts the process of giving him impairment. What the claimant did was to say that Milliken's impairment had no weight. That his causation with respect to impairment had no weight. It only had weight with respect to MMI. That's the net result of what you argued when he moved to strike the final admission of liability. So I think they're entirely two separate causation analysis. One for permanent impairment by a separate independent, division-independent medical evaluator, as opposed to the MMI division. And it's confusing because we have two separate processes.
I understand. What is the point then of having a causation? Explain to me the point of having a causation determination with respect to MMI. Isn't it saying that person's at maximum medical improvement with respect to A, B, and C?
Or not.
Or not.
Or not. And that's important, because if the dying doctor said or not, then he goes back for treatment and until he can get to MMI again. That time impairment is determined. So it may be entirely different set of conditions that are going to be finally rated.
But here Dr. Milliken said he was at MMI.
Correct.
With respect to all three of those conditions, right?
Correct.
And I guess what you're saying to us is the import of that decision was, yes, he was at MMI with respect to the back, the foot, and the CPRS, but I have no, and I'm saying he has an impairment, but you're saying he has no authority to say what the impairment is for those three things until he goes back.
Correct.
To
the law of this case.
Until he goes back to ATP and then goes if he requested a
then CPRS. We start the process all over as to rating and causation. And the ATP determines causation separately as well.
Okay.
In terms of rating. And if anybody disputes that, then we go to the dime, a new dime, and that dime determines causation for impairment.
Okay.
Nobody's arguing about MMI anymore.
So I am confused still about what the panel sentence in that I just read to you meant, but maybe it's
maybe something that we don't have over here.
Assistant Town Council? That's fine.
Would you like to weigh in?
If you want to do that, that's fine.
About 4 minutes.
You have 4 minutes left. If you want to address it, go right ahead.
If not, that I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Just for the record, so that everybody knows what I'm talking about, at page 6 and 7, bottom of 6, top of 7, for the panel's opinion, that's where the sentence comes from that I read. And that's the sentence that confused me. Again, it says causation is inherent in the MMI, the 18-month dime's conclusions that the CRPS and the lumbar spine components related to the industrial injury were also subject to presumptive weight for purposes of overcoming the MMI determination. That was a sentence that confused me. Okay. Thank you, Councilor.
Alice Housley. May it please the court, my registration number is 32195, and I appear here on behalf of the ICAO. I'm going to direct my comments right to your question. And I think what this sentence gives is trying to give context to this presumptive validity. The question of jurisdiction. What is the weight that should be given to an 18 months dime? It specifically says that it was the MMI determination that must be overcome by clear and convincing. So I think that's what we need to keep in context here, is that it is the 18 month. And I think I'm looking at the right page. There's a lot of this language is, you're looking at the top of page 6.
Bottom is actually the last sentence on page 6 of the copy I have.
Okay.
Top sentence on page 7. Sorry.
Sorry, I was looking at the top of page 6. Right. So I think the point that the ICO is trying to make, they're trying to separate out the presumptive weight, because the presumptive validity, that's when you get to this jurisdictional argument. If there is no presumptive validity given to the issue of impairment for Dr. Milliken's report, mm-hmm. then there can't be an issue of jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the phrasing at the end, the weight for the purposes of overcoming the MMI, I think goes to what Mr. Perales was talking about, is that it is the MMI determination that is given presumptive validity.
And there's no dispute about that here.
Nobody challenged it. And I think what has come out in this conversation, which is important to the context of these type of cases, and keep in mind, ICAO, we don't care about the money. We care about how our statutes are read. We care about making sure that there's a clear path going forward and that the guidelines are followed and there is consistency and harmonious reading of our statutes. So to us, it this case does matter, not because of a dollar amount that's going to be given or not given, but because it's important to understand how the presumptive validity works in the separation between the MMI. I think your points were very, very valid and very clear. The MMI, there is nothing in 8B, the MMI portion of the statute, that talks about the causation. The 18-month dime is strictly limited to MMI. The cases that have followed this, Qualmed, Egan, these cases that talk about how it's inherent, the inherent decision, or the inherent collateral, you know, the causation, and these are all cases where it wasn't an 18-month dime. There wasn't a separation between the dime. You know, the decision of the initial dime was for both MMI, and impairment. So I think you need to keep that in mind. Keep the statutory, the separated statutory provisions in mind, and not necessarily focus on the exact language of a case that may not apply to the context that we have here in following the statute and the separation between the MMI, the 18-month dime, and the ability to have a separate dime. Now, there was never any challenge or dispute that it had to be the same dime. So I would just encourage you to read this in the context of these separate and distinct articulated statutory provisions that require these determinations.
Thank you, Counselor. ICO may want harmony, but it seems like there's a lack of harmony even within the ICO, but we'll try to harmonize this. I think the counsel for the appellant still has a little bit of time left, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you. The ICAO decision is confusing, convoluted. It is going to create massive confusion with the practitioners in workers' compensation. You are correct, Judge Richmond, that the statement in on page 6 that causation must be given, you know, a presumption. And there's case law, Qualmed says that causation is, you know, given presumption, presumptive effect, and that it's inherent in MMI. Okay, you have three things. You have causation, MMI, and impairment. They all are entitled to presumptive effect. So basically what respond or appellees are arguing is that it's okay to have one dime say something's work-related and another dime say that it's not. That is going to create mass confusion.
The problem I have with your argument, counsel, is that the statute talks about MMI and the statute talks about impairment, but nowhere does it specifically allocate causation to one dime or the other.
But here's the thing. Why does somebody file a workers' compensation claim? Because something is work-related. That causation determination,
or not, as you said,
before. Or not work-related, okay, but the causation determination is inherent in every single issue in the workers' comp system. If it's not work-related, it's not in the work comp system, okay? It's inherent in everything, okay? And so the problem is, from a practical standpoint, that this is going to create mass confusion. Okay, because practitioners, the dime is supposed to bring finality to these three issues. And where you open the door for dime number one to have conflicting opinions with dime number two, that's going to create problems.
But because doesn't happen all the time. The ALJ can decide which one is more persuasive. There's different, the ALJ always has to decide.
But the dime is a quasi-judicial officer, and where an insurance company does not object to those findings, that dime's determination on causation has the effect of an ALJ's final decision on causation. Okay? So once it's made, pursuant to Loprino, there is no jurisdiction for a subsequent judge, a subsequent dime, or anybody else to revisit that causation determination, and that is the City and County of Denver case that I pointed out to you.
Which you didn't cite to us, of course. Okay.
Yes.
Counsel, thank you very much for your arguments.
Okay.
The case will stand submitted, and counsel are excused. An opinion of issue in due course.